It's a couple minutes after 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, where for the Snacks Job programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California at Irvine. Good morning, it's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI in Irvine. Alright, that's new music by the New Pornographers with a song called Jackie Dressed in Cobra. Sometimes our interpretation of what constitutes an animal song is pretty loose. It has to be, but it's talking animals, and there's a reason for this. I'll get back to that in a second. But this is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, and streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine, home, speaking of animals, of sorts, of the anteaters. And it wasn't strictly a coincidence that I started the show with an animal song, sort of, from the New Pornographers. They're a great little band with a great new album, and I have tickets to give away to their concert September 29th, that's later this very week, at the Music Box at the Fonda Theater in Hollywood. So you can even call now. We'll get into phone numbers and stuff momentarily again, officially, but 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And for no apparent reason, we'll give you a pair. How's that? I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy, I'm telling you. We love to get calls, and again, that's the number to call if you want tickets to the New Pornographers. You can also instant message us. Yes, we're all set there. via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name, perhaps not surprisingly, is Talking Animals. Other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and checking out our website, talkinganimals.net. Again, it's .net, folks. Also, before I move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rousing rendition of The Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources, but we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website. Again, it's talkinganimals.net, where just about every show we've ever broadcast is archived. Clearly the heart of the program, you'll see, is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, rather than our customary format of a single guest, we'll be speaking with some people, three at this point, who have all traveled down to New Orleans for one reason or another, in one context or another, but all, directly to help rescue, treat, care for the animals affected by Hurricane Katrina. So they include Michael Mountain, president and co-founder of Best Friends Animal Society, which operates the country's largest sanctuary for cats and dogs, and that group has undertaken major rescue efforts for Katrina animals. Dr. Jennifer Conrad, director of the PAW Project, which has shepherded legislative efforts to outline feline decline. And, of course, she's a practicing veterinarian and rescued and treated numerous animals in and around Louisiana. And Meg Brubaker, a woman living in Ontario, Canada, so moved by the plight of these newly orphaned animals that she checked with the Humane Society and to make sure that if she came back with some animals, they could help and accommodate them. And the director not only said yes, but said, hey, I'm going with you. Drove from Canada to Louisiana and rescued about 15 animals or thereabouts. Came back, and we'll hear her story as well. So I think we'll get from those things a kind of individual little separate snapshots of kind of what people saw and what the effects of Katrina were down there. And that may also, of course, have implications for the wake of Rita as well. So I think what we're going to do, actually, is skip for the moment our news segment, and we'll come back to that later if we have time, but mainly we really want to talk to these three people and get their impressions. So I think we have Dr. Conrad. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Cool. Well, so let's sort of jump right in. When did you go down there, and where exactly did you kind of head specifically?
Well, I arrived in Baton Rouge about a week and a half ago now, and mm-hmm. Went right into New Orleans. Most of my work I did in the French Quarter, and there were animals everywhere.
Just kind of, in other words, like roaming or just looking for help or dry land or just, when you say they were everywhere, seeking, anything or help or, food. Well, what's kind of, give us a sense of the scene when you kind of first got there.
Well, I was saddened to see that animals were still locked in houses and that, I think that New Orleans probably had a tremendous amount of stray animals anyway. But we found some seriously horrible cases where animals had been tethered to fences and had been drowned because they couldn't get up high enough to get air. And when we found some very encouraging things where the people who had the animals had left out as much food and water as they possibly could, and the animals were still alive.
Mm. Who accompanied you on this trip? Were there friends, other vets, other people just to kind of help you with whatever care that you were going to provide? Or
I had I brought a core group of people who I knew would be able to help in all sorts of situations, some vet techs, and just some people who just really cared about the animals, and we were able to do a lot. Mostly taking animals out of New Orleans and processing them through Lamar Dixon, which is a shelter that was set up in Gonzales, which is between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, and we brought the animals there. And the the things that strike me the most about the situation were how generous the American public was, when you, the amount of food and the concern of the American public for the animals was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
There were also some things that were so sad, like to think about the stress that these animals went through, and for, you know, for days and days and days, and then to be processed, and I don't even know what happened to them now. I hope that people who have these animals in New Orleans, I hope they're going to try and claim their animals again, although I fear that most of New Orleans is probably too poor now to take care of animals.
So it sounds like a lot of what the team that you had assembled did was just treat ones, I guess, what sort of almost in a triage sense, like whatever animals look to need the most help first. Is that kind of how you, I mean, it sounds like you were just overwhelmed with animals that needed help of one kind or another.
Yeah, it's true. Most of them were just starving.
Yeah.
Occasionally we found animals that needed veterinary care because they had crossed the line between starving, and they were on their way to death.
Mm.
And so by rehydrating them and slowly reintroducing them to food, we were able to save them.
Sure.
But
it sounds like, on the other hand, if I follow your last statement, that once you would do that, then it was unclear, again, maybe because of the sheer overwhelming number of animals, what fate would befall them subsequently.
Yeah, well, that's true. The ones that were very, very sick, I actually did not put into the system. I actually took with me.
Back to California.
Yeah,
okay.
And then the ones that were okay and were healthy enough to go into the system, I hope don't have a bad fate now, because they've been through hell and they deserve better.
Mm-hmm. And when you say into the system, does that mean just kind of more a conventional way that they would be, people would be notified that they're there if they had tags, assumingly they had, you know, I don't know if there's any way to even check chips or whatever, but if they had tags, then people would say, hey, so-and-so was found, or so-and-so was up for adoption after a certain amount of time. I mean, is it that conventional, or is it much more insane than that, just given, the devastation down there?
Well, I think that a lot of the people in New Orleans probably aren't even aware that their animals are going to be posted on petfinder.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if they have access to the Internet. I know that there were calls coming in, and there's a lot of stories on the Internet of people trying to get to their animals and were thwarted by one reason or another. And so I feel really bad for them.
Mm. So that's the other thing, is that much like that we've seen and heard repeatedly with humans getting separated, and they don't know where their son is or their uncle or whoever it might be, I guess a lot of times people wouldn't know that actually the dog might be fine, although I guess that's a relative term, but much less how to, like, hook back up with it.
Exactly, and I think that there's also a genuine concern that there's some racial profiling here for dogs, where pit bulls are going to be euthanized just across the board.
Really? Just because what people feel like, given what we're dealing with, is that's just too much trouble, or what's the rationale, if there is one, for that?
Well, unfortunately, I think pit bulls have gotten a bad rap,
mm-hmm.
and even though they are one of the most loyal and loving dogs I've ever met, I'm afraid that people are afraid of them. And
their general reputation, I guess, kind of precedes them in a situation like
yeah,
this. Is that
exactly?
Oh, God. Now, I'm afraid actually to ask this question in a way, because I'm afraid of what the answer might be. But in everything I've heard and read, and even a lot of the emails and listserv stuff that I've gotten, which is why I wanted to do a show like this today, I haven't heard too much about cats. Is that because there's an awful explanation? Or, I mean, I hear and see a lot more about dogs, and almost to the exclusion of cats.
Yeah, I think that there are two reasons for that. First one is that in Louisiana, you know, cats aren't even listed on the books as an animal. They don't have any rights whatsoever.
Mm.
And so for that reason,
yeah,
you're not hearing about them. The second one is, I think that the cats were actually in better shape than most of the dogs. The cats seemed to be able to adapt get to higher ground or up a tree or whatever, and they weren't as starving as the dogs that I saw.
Oh, okay. Well, that part, frankly, is, you know, better than I thought part of the answer was going to be. So
yeah, it's kind of interesting because, of course, cats in this part of the country are very highly revered, but they're not at all. And maybe that's to their benefit because they aren't tied to fences and they aren't.
Mm-hmm. So their own kind of instincts for survival and getting to higher ground and finding maybe whatever they're scrapped to eat is actually not thwarted the way, like, dogs, like you described, that might be with well-intentioned at the time. But if they're tied up or anchored or, you know, whatever, they can't get away if the water rises or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Wow. Okay, and what about Lamar?
Lamar, my doggie?
Well, yes. I mean, that's just, you know, among the huge volume of email and, like I say, listener of stuff, which is, again, why I wanted to do this kind of show that we're doing today. I mean, that just, you know, his picture and his story kind of struck me, and I don't know if you want to take a minute and talk about him or not.
Well, Lamar is a very, very lucky individual because Lamar has too much pit bull in him for him to enter the system, and he was a stray dog.
Mm.
He's never had anyone who cared about him. And so he was the first animal that we rescued. We saw him scrounging in the streets, and basically at maybe 60% of his normal body weight. He's so thin and emaciated, and his skin was actually peeling off. And we took him in, and he turned out to be really an excellent individual. And we took him home, and now he has an excellent home.
Great. Well, there you go. Now, we're just probably nearing the end of our time, Dr. Conrad, but what? How can we help? How can anybody listening, how can we ourselves help? I mean, donations, is there a website or sites that we should be aware of? Maybe you can talk about the Animal General Hospital.
Well, animalgeneralhospital.org is my organization,
mm-hmm.
and we are down there in the field doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I encourage people to look at is give the money. If you're not going to be there yourself, give money to the smaller organizations that are actually doing the work and not
mm-hmm.
thwarting everybody.
Yeah.
Some organizations are making money from this, and other organizations are emptying their coffers because they know that the animals are in need. And
mm-hmm.
so that's a very fundamental difference. So I encourage people not to give money to organizations that are not really helping.
I don't suppose you'd care to name names.
I think people know that,
okay,
that the big guys, they don't need money anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's the little ones that are actually in the field doing the work. Those are the ones that need the money.
And along those lines, Dr. Conrad, I mean, again, some of the various communications I've received, officially, unofficially, whatever, it sounds like, and again, this is sort of part of the larger problems, at least in the initial days after Katrina hit, but it sounds like the kind of more official, I guess, quote-unquote word, was that, you know, things were sort of in hand, I guess, relative to the animals, and that people would try to go down there and help or send supplies or food or other things down, and often the times those things couldn't get through or refused, or people were saying, no, we've got this covered. Is that, I hope that's incorrect, but was there some of that you found when you were down there? Or?
Well, I think that because of Louisiana's understanding of animals, that people didn't realize how important animals were to the animal rescue groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so at first, animal rescue groups were thwarted and not considered a real group to get in there. But
yeah.
as the stories and the news started to realize that this was probably the most compelling part of the story, the animal rescue groups were allowed in and have done a tremendous work getting animals out. By contrast, if a hurricane had hit, let's say Malibu, I don't think that people would have been told they can't take their pets and they can't. So, I hope that the one really good thing that can come out of this is that Louisiana changes its mind about cats and animals in saying that they are actually worthwhile. Members of families, and I hope that the rest of the nation realizes that by adopting animals, you're doing a bigger service, and you have a much more grateful animal than if you just buy an animal from a breeder.
Absolutely. Yeah. We never want to buy. We always want to adopt.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now there's this huge influx of animals that need adoption, and I hope that people can open up their homes to these animals, because as much as I want the Louisiana animals to have a home, I also want the animals that are local to have homes. So it would be horrible to displace all the animals that are in the pound in Los Angeles today by animals that from Louisiana. Just, it's better to take one of each.
Sure, absolutely. And with that in mind, I think, again, if people could go to animalgeneralhospital.org and find out how they can help, and maybe there's probably stuff that can send them in the right path to adopt. One of each, I think, would be good, but at least one animal. Everybody, let's at least adopt one, and if you can do one of each, so much the better.
Exactly.
Okay, Dr. Carmel, thank you so much for your time, and do you plan to go back down, in the wake of Rita or just otherwise, or...
Yeah, I just sent a caravan down. They're arriving this morning to New Orleans to take another... group of dogs. We have actually, I think, 5 trucks coming back next week.
Wow.
So we'll have a bunch of animals again. And, we'll do it as long as it's necessary.
Yeah, that's so great. Well, gosh, thank you so much for all your great work and efforts. And thanks for taking the time to join us again on Talking Animals today.
It's always a pleasure, Duncan.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, again, that's Dr. Jennifer Conrad, among her many hats, or she's the director of the Paw Project, but again, it's right now kind of more of the focus of her efforts with a lot of great help, it sounds like, of course, down in and around where Katrina hit, and again, so animalgeneralhospital.org is where you... We could find out more about that and help out, maybe send a few bucks. So, anyways, I think it's as good a time as any for a little levity. So let's jump into the comedy corner, and then we'll have our next guest join us, Michael Mountain, after that. The comedy corner, of course, always involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Eddie Izzard with a piece called Talk to the Animals on today's Comedy Corner on KUCI.
But, you know, whales, they're intelligent. They do whale song. We don't know what it means, but I think that whales are traveling at 78. They're traveling at 78 speed, and if we take them up to 45 speed, we'll find they're actually going, I love you, baby. Yeah, they're DJs, you see. DJs of the sea. Because sound travels well in water, and they need a big PA to be a DJ, but they've got their whole bodies. Yeah, it works, doesn't it? This next song is going out to all the goldfish down by the Azores. I love you, baby. So they're intelligent, and dolphins, they're intelligent because we all saw the documentary Flipper. Well, dolphins came up going, what's that? What's that, Flip? Chiang Kai-shek is having trouble. Mao Tse-tung has taken over mainland China. Chiang Kai-shek has retired to Taiwan with some of his followers, where they will have a complete disregard for international copyright rules. Is that what you're saying, Flip, or do you want fish? Because every episode of Flipper, he'd say the same thing. Always having a problem. What's that? What? A boy trapped in a well, trapped in the water. Three boys fell out of a ship, a small ship, a big ship. Two syllables. Big ship, big ship, small ship. Sounds like the deep. Bit like the deep, bit of shark, jaws, da da da, like that. What? Gone with the wind. Okay. And they were all like that. There was Skippy. Yeah. What's that, Skip? A boy trapped, drowning in a desert. Ill. He's in a sandy place. He's ill. He's got a bad leg. What? Gone with the wind? and Lassie as well. What, you know, oh, Lassie, Flippy, Skippy, all that E sound. Except for Flipper. It was supposed to be Slippy, you know? But I fucked it up. Bastard. Anyway. And then there was seals. Seals are not intelligent. You know, whoa, I'm not sure. But they're good with balls, aren't they? Seals are good with balls, and there's no logic of it. There are no balls in their natural environment, in Antarctic, the Arctic, the Al-Antarctic, Antarctic, Arctic, Arctic, Arctic. And there's just no fucking balls there, are there? There's no... They flip out onto the thingy, and the, you know, the ice flow, and they're not going, where's my ball, eh? But in an aquarium, in a dolphinarium, in a sealarium, they're fucking amazing. Do, go!
But you never see a seal that's bad. All right. All right, that was more Eddie Izzard than we even planned to offer on today's Comedy Corner, with a piece called Talk to the Animals, taken from his album simply entitled Circle. Comedy Course is Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're already listening to Talking Animals on KGCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way. And some of you, perhaps, arrived through our small website, TalkingAnimals.net. We're continuing our show sort of devoted to people who have been down helping the animals in and around New Orleans, Louisiana, Mississippi area, all in the wake, of course, of Katrina. And so we spoke with Dr. Jennifer Conrad a moment ago. We're, with any luck, going to have Michael Mountain from Best Friends Animal Society on with us momentarily. And then a bit later in the show, Meg Brubaker. And that's the one who, again, you know, just drove from Canada to Louisiana and scooped up as many animals as she could rescue and drove back. So, anyways, we're going to maybe get in a couple of news items while we're getting Michael on the phone. And I guess we'll start with kind of another... well, let's dive into the animal news, produced as always by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Indian authorities... let's see, this is from New Delhi, letting tens of thousands of cows scavenge for garbage in the polluted streets of India's capital is, to many Hindus, no way to treat a sacred animal. But finding good homes for stray cattle has proved difficult in this metropolis of about 14 million people. A new breed of urban cowboys may have just the trick. Under court order to clear wandering cattle from Delhi's streets, the municipal government has deployed truckloads of cattle catchers to patrol the streets and lasso the strays. Hired hands equipped with long-barreled, spring-loaded guns then shoot computer chips down into their stomachs before they are herded off for auction. Chief veterinarian Dr. Suresh Kumar said the chips would force buyers to keep their cows corralled and give Delhi the most successful roundup in the city's 3,000-year history. City auctions off captured strays for an average of $45 a head, with a catch. Buyers must prove that they live out of state and sign an oath that they're taking the cow with them, and they have to pay about $10 for the computer chip. Okay, cool. Well, we'll come back to the news as we have time, but we want to jump right into... this is Michael Mountain. He's the president and co-founder of Best Friends Animal Society. Michael, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Nice to be with you.
I want to just, of course, jump right in and ask, or actually just say, I mean, Best Friends seemed to really mobilize its rescue forces really quickly after Katrina hit. I mean, how long... afterwards, were Best Friends, rescuers able to arrive down there?
Well, we set off there actually on the day of the hurricane itself. That was a Monday, you may remember.
Sure.
And our first person flew into Houston, drove out to Mississippi, in fact, and then just to start assessing the situation. And Our first major rescue was of an animal sanctuary, the St. Francis Animal Sanctuary, that had been completely blown away by the hurricane. They had no power or water, and they had about 24 hours of food left. So, and what they did, basically, in exchange for getting their sanctuary up and running, was that they turned really the whole property over to Best Friends, so that we could start building a whole new sanctuary there and start bringing animals out from New Orleans. And we've now brought about 1,000 or more so far.
So in a sense, it almost became like an instant satellite location for Best Friends, sort of? Or?
Well, exactly. I mean, none of this was ever really planned, but it all just kind of came together real quick.
Wow.
We were very fortunate to be able to work with an old colleague, Bert Smith, who is the director of animal control in Jefferson Parish. That's one of the New Orleans counties, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And when none of the other rescue groups were able to get in because of all of this nightmare of bureaucratic hassle and red tape and nonsense,
yeah,
we were able to go in through Bert Smith and the sheriff of Jefferson Parish. And the word down there is always, you don't mess with the sheriff of Jefferson Parish.
Right, that's if there's one motto to live by, right? Yeah.
So we've been bringing out animals every day ever since. And
wow.
It's been a hard work with a lot of great volunteers. We have about 50 volunteers at the sanctuary on any given day, including veterinarians and other rescue teams that send in trucks of food and supplies, and it's really just been an extraordinary experience.
Well, it also sounds incredibly fast and deft. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Michael, is I gather that part of that, at least, was due to Paul Berry, the hurricane relief director for Best Friends, or is it actually disaster relief director?
Hurricane relief is just fine. I mean, that is, I think, a new title because
yeah.
It's really not the business we've been in. Our,
sure.
Our main work is has not been disaster relief up to this point. But Paul, as you say, has been very central to this. He's a native of New Orleans, so he knows the whole city inside out. He used to run mobile spay neuter operations down there. He's founder of another animal organization that still works down there. And so he was the guy who got together with Jefferson Parish and so on and managed to put all of this together. Yes, none of this would have been possible without him.
Yeah, it sounds like both his background and being familiar with the area made this come together so quickly. And I mean, that many more animals obviously were really helped and rescued in that regard. And what does he do otherwise when there isn't a disaster of some kind or other to respond to? Is he part of Best Friends normally, or this was just kind of came together because of?
He's a major part of Best Friends. He's
yeah.
our COO, if you like, our chief operations director here
okay.
At Best Friends itself.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, he's very very much a part of the whole thing. In fact, right now he's down in San Antonio because we wanted to just get some get him on the ground there to just assess again what the needs would be there. And fortunately, as we all know now, there was not a huge displacement of animals or people or whatever in the same way as there was in New Orleans and Mississippi.
Yeah, well, it sounds like that might have been a product both of Rita not being as devastating as predicted as it was unfolding, and I guess some lessons learned and better mobilization beforehand, you think, before Rita hit with getting animals to a place where that wouldn't be as problematic if it was as devastating as predicted, or...
Well, the hugely big different thing that happened in Texas that they learned was that the government did not tell people to leave their pets behind.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing more than anything that was just completely devastating to the animal thing and indeed the people rescue, because in New Orleans, and you know, everybody's seen stories of this now, there were people holed up in their houses refusing to leave because they couldn't take their pets with them.
Yeah.
And this just held up all of the people rescue efforts, made life very difficult for military people trying to get folks out and so on, because people just wouldn't leave without their animals.
Sure.
And made the animal rescue obviously very difficult as well, because you had these animals stranded on car roofs and roofs of houses and porches in these flooded areas for, you know, what has now been 4 weeks. But in Texas, that didn't happen. Most people took their pets with them. There were some problems at staging areas and shelters and whatever, but just nothing like what was the case in New Orleans.
Sure. And along those lines, I mean, from emails and listserv information, other sources, I've really gotten the distinct impression that the scope, at least initially, the scope and the severity of the situation regarding the animals was kind of underreported. But the people that were there, like you and Paul and many others, could see that a sort of botched communication was preventing volunteers and supplies and other kinds of help from getting through. I mean, was that kind of your observations as well, or?
Yes, there was botched communication, but I'd have to say, everybody says let's not get into the blame game. And
sure. Oh yeah, and I'm not looking. I'm just trying to understand. Yeah, what happened down there?
The fact of the matter is that. The rescue groups were actually stopped by the whole official bureaucracy from going in and doing their job. It wasn't simply that there were botched communications. There were very clear communications, and the clear communication was
you can't come in here.
Go in there.
Yeah, yeah. And so meanwhile, of course, then the animals there, many of them paid a price for that while people were sort of sorting that out, I guess, for lack of a better phrase.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid to the tune of, I think in the final count, be tens of thousands of animals, which is just a terrible shame.
Yeah.
We finally, as I said, we were able to dodge a lot of that by going in sort of under the radar through Jefferson Parish. But another of the big parishes, St. Bernard, we only got, again, we were the first in, but this was still... almost just a day shy, a couple of days shy of 3 weeks after the hurricane had hit. And you've got to ask, well, what was the holdup? Why wouldn't they let anybody in?
Yeah.
And you had military people who were actually one of the great heroes of this whole thing, especially for the animals, who were out simply on their own picking up animals unofficially, feeding them their MREs and all of this to try keeping them going.
Wow.
But yeah, there are just major lessons to be learned out of it all. And there are still some of the big rescue organizations who still basically haven't been able to get into town yet, which is amazing in itself.
And Michael, I mean, so it sounds like you guys, again, through Paul's expertise and others, you not only were able to get down there and respond fast, but with this kind of, so-called satellite sanctuary that you were able to, I assume, use that as a base and then just kind of continue to sweep out into various areas, or at least where you could get through successfully, and rescue animals in a pretty broad area.
Well, certainly the whole of Jefferson Parish. New Orleans basically is three parishes.
Yeah.
And we had full access to one and then laid on to the two others. There were other groups who were able to get in as well sooner or later, but frankly, whatever we did was still something of a drop in the bucket. I mean, there were thousands of people who'd been encouraged to, and who let us know, you know, that they had an animal in such and such apartment building or whatever.
Sure.
Many of those we've never been able to get to, again, for all the same reasons of not being able to send in enough volunteers and so on, not having enough permits for them to go in.
Sure.
What it would actually have taken, I mean, we had, you know, about sometimes four boats out there on the streets, and it would really have taken 100 boats, frankly, to
cover
it
all. Yeah. Michael, looks like we might have a call from one of our listeners. Would you like to take a call?
Be happy to.
Okay. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI with Michael Mountain from Best Friends.
Just wanted to know, what's the investigation that's supposed to be going on? Is Animal Rescue being contacted? Do you know if they're going to be a large part of the investigation into this whole mess?
We might have missed the first part of your question. I'm sorry, because I had trouble getting it on the air. Maybe you could repeat from the beginning your question. I'm very sorry.
Okay. Thank you for all the good work you're doing. I was wondering, with the investigation going on, is Animal Rescue going to be a big part of that? Has anybody been contacted? Do they know? Do you happen to know that yet?
The one thing I can say about that, I don't really know about the investigation and how it's going to be conducted or whatever. I would frankly imagine that Animal Rescue will be actually a somewhat small part of it, but I did have the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. Last week and spend an hour with two Congress people who That's Tom Lantos of California, in fact, and Christopher Shays of Connecticut. And they are the co-chairs of the Friends of Congressional Friends of Animals Caucus. Let me get the name right.
Okay.
And they invited a group of us to talk with them about what some of the problems were so that they could actually take this up themselves. And they did write a rather strong letter to the Director of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff, saying you've got to include animals in mm-hmm. in what you're doing and in the investigation. And they've also put forth a bill requiring that animals be always considered in any future disaster operations by FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management what does it stand for again?
Agency?
No,
yeah.
I don't know.
Administration.
Yeah.
Federal Emergency Management Administration.
Right.
Too many long words. But so to a limited extent, short answer to your question, yes, the animals will be included in the investigation, but in a small way.
I see. Well, I hope they delve into it further. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you so much for your call.
Okay.
And, Mike, we're probably just nearing the end of our time, but in that regard and generally, too, what can people do to help? Can we write letters or do other things to support that letter that was written to Michael Chertoff? Can we, you know, obviously, where can we send money that would be most effective for helping these rescue efforts and the animal friends that we've already scooped up?
Best thing in a nutshell is to go to our website, and I noticed you have a link from your website, KUCI one, but bestfriends.org,
mm-hmm.
and there is a section in the hurricane relief area
mm-hmm.
about how you can help. And it's basically everything from supplies, obviously, to cash donations to help this whole rescue effort is going to be going on still for many months to come, and many other ways that people can actually participate.
That's great. All right, so it's bestfriends.org, and then from there, the sort of people can make their choices
yeah.
how many ways they want to help. They don't want to help just one way. We want to have them help in multiple ways, and including maybe adopting an animal that's wound up, otherwise homeless, right?
Adopting and fostering is
yeah.
Is all going on at the moment.
Sure.
That's the next phase of things, is getting all these animals out to good homes temporarily if we're going to be able to find their families, and permanently if we don't.
Perfect. All right. Well, Michael, thank you so much for making the time to join us on Talking Animals. It's again, it's Best Friends Animal Society, and the website one more time is bestfriends.org. Thanks so much for your time and all your great efforts, Michael.
Thank you, Duncan.
All right.
It's
take
great.
Care. Bye bye. Okay. It's Talking Animals, and I think we're going to jump right into. We're just kind of mixing things up a little bit because we're doing a little different show, and it was great again to get that perspective. And so let's play Name That Animal Tune at this point, and that is like any other Name That Tune game you care to think of, except in this game, the tunes are always animal related. So I'm going to start this tune. As soon as you know it, call in 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And if you're the first person to correctly identify it, you will have your choice of prizes, including, did I mention that we've got tickets to the New Pornographers? It's September 29th. It's at the Music Box at the Henry Fonda in Hollywood. Great band, great new album, great venue to see them, and I can give you free tickets, folks. So that's one of the prizes. Otherwise, we've got Talking Animals sweatshirt, Talking Animals coffee mug. We've got stuff from other animal organizations. We've got CDs, books, cat toys, dog collars, etc. So 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. If you can name this animal tune, and then shortly we'll be back with our other guests, Meg Brubaker on Talk Animals on KUCI. All right. Can anyone name that animal to you? Can they? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, if you can. Meanwhile, we want to introduce our guest, Meg Brubaker. Again, I mentioned a little bit, but I mostly want to have her tell the story that, you know, in fact, let's just bring her on the air and have her tell it from the beginning, because it's going to be a lot better than me telling it anyway. So, Meg, are you there?
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. I really appreciate you making the time to chat with us a little bit.
No problem.
So, I was starting to tell our listeners, and then I realized, you know what, it's much better probably if you tell our listeners sort of from the get-go kind of your, you know, what you decided to do. I mean, I gather you were sort of watching or reading much the same Katrina coverage as the rest of us, but what made you decide to basically drive from Canada to Louisiana to rescue these animals? Maybe you could just sort of take us through kind of what, you know, what spurred you to do that.
Sure. I guess the first thing that happened is I lost my job, and I had been watching CNN, of course, along with a lot of other people, and was quite moved by the stories and pictures of the dogs, basically, as well, of course, as the people. And the day I lost my job, the last day, I decided I needed a project.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'd lived in Louisiana and Mississippi for a number of years, I felt like I knew the situation there as far as homeless dogs go, as on a regular basis, an ongoing basis, and I thought this is really just going to be so much, make it so much worse.
Mm-hmm.
So I just made a few phone calls. I found a shelter on the internet in Louisiana, in Alexandria, and I phoned her, and she said our number one need right now is to transport dogs out. Then I proceeded to phone a humane society or two, and the second one I called said, we'll take any dog you can bring us, and we'll give you some money, and the director offered to come along. And at that point, I didn't have a partner to go with me, so it was great. And I had been searching for a van, and the University of Guelph here, where I live, offered to let me have their van that's set up to transport dogs, so it was just absolutely perfect. The next day at noon, we left.
And how long?
I hadn't even met Bonnie, the director.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. So you placed this call to see if, you know, people could accommodate any animals that you
right.
might well come back with, and the next thing you know, it sounds like the director said, yeah, that'll work, and I'm coming with you.
Yeah.
This was Bonnie Deacon, right? Yeah.
Yes, yeah, good old Bonnie.
Wow.
Great, you know, We really left before we had much time to think about it.
Well, sometimes those are the best ways to do something like this, because if you had thought about it, I mean, who knows? You know, I mean, you probably still would have gone, but I mean, it's such a huge undertaking. How long a drive is that, by the way, Meg?
It was about 24 to 26 hours, I suppose.
Oh,
you know,
my
a little
goodness.
Longer with the dogs.
Yeah. Well, so how did you? Yeah, both going down, but especially coming back. How did you actually do that? I mean, did you break it up, and then once you had the dogs with you coming back, well, actually, yeah, I mean, just logistically, how did you handle a drive like that with then a van full of dogs?
Well, it was actually a fairly good learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
We hooked up through connections I'd made looking for a van and trying to do this over a couple of days. I sent out a lot of emails. Eventually, I was hooked up with a woman in the States who coordinates transports all over. And she said there was a person near Nashville that was willing to put us up. And we thought, well, that's about halfway. That would probably be a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But we learned that really in the dog's best interest, it's probably better to drive straight through. And when I say that, I mean the adult dogs. We really made sure, first of all, we had a really good air conditioner in the back that kept them cool. We misted them. We gave them water. And they probably would have done better just going straight through the 24, 26 hours. The puppies, because we had 7 puppies, they were a little bit more high maintenance.
Wow.
We had some puppies as young as 6 weeks, rather, old.
Oh, my goodness.
And they first of all made a lot of noise. And the adult dogs, you don't even know they're there. The puppies were quite high maintenance. And
sure.
when you feed and water them, of course, they got to pee and poop. So
right.
it just becomes a little bit more difficult to accommodate them and make sure they're really happy and doing well. You know, we really wanted to make sure they weren't stressed. And
mm-hmm.
We sprayed this Comfort Zone, which is a product you can buy, and into the van a few times a day just to make sure, you know, they remained calm. And they were great. They were just absolute troopers. The only ones that were the troublemakers were the little pups.
Sure. Well, let me, I mean, we're sort of through my own fault, kind of telling the story slightly out of order. So let me just go back, if I could, to when you and Bonnie set out on the drive. It's a 24, 26-hour drive, and then you finally arrived. Maybe you could just tell us sort of what your first impression when you and Bonnie got out of the car, wherever that was, and what you saw.
Well, we had seen some damage on the way down. We didn't get any farther south than Alexandria, which is 2 hours north of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw some damage in Tennessee and Mississippi on the drive down, and when we got to the shelter in Alexandria, I was glad to be there. This is the woman I'd hooked up with over the internet and had phoned her and told her we were coming. And my intention was never to take dogs that might be, you know, set up at some point to have a reunion with an owner. I knew that the shelters and humane societies there are overflowing and are crowded. They have a high rate of euthanization due to overpopulation of pets in general. And I felt that if we could just help any shelter remove some dogs under any situation, I would be thrilled, because I know the need is there.
Sure.
Pre-hurricane. And it was great, because we helped dogs that I would say they were on a dead-end street, that they weren't on CNN and nobody knew about them, and they were in desperate need of being moved. It was the best experience I've probably ever had, to be able to really just do it, go down, and even if it was only 16 dogs, we sure made a difference for those guys.
So how did you given the sheer number of dogs that you've seen at that time, I mean, how did you decide who would sort of make it into the van, as it were? I mean,
well, that's the hard part.
Yeah.
It was one of the really good things that that came out of Katrina, certainly, and Rita, I suppose, is that a lot of transports did come to the area to move dogs. I think a lot of people recognized the need, and there were a lot of rescue groups from many, many different states: California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Wisconsin, Kentucky. Ourselves, that actually did the same thing. They just loaded up a van with supplies. We did take a lot of supplies down, by the way, from Ontario for the evacuees, as well as for dogs and cats.
Oh, great.
And it really was, it is and continues to be a huge movement of people just like myself who, maybe represent a rescue group or a humane society,
mm-hmm.
who just took it upon themselves to go down and move some dogs. And this is not even dogs, perhaps, that have been affected directly by the hurricane. We had, there's a huge variety of where these dogs came from. Some of them a local pound. Some of them were evacuee turn-in. Some of them were from an overcrowded shelter that we were trying to help. So, and this is what has become of this. It's become a big movement where people are just helping any way they can with money and donations and with moving dogs to places. The Humane Society here didn't have any dogs when we left for adoption. None. Zero.
Really?
So we really felt strongly that this was a good move on our part. Since then, I think they got a few dogs in the week we were gone, like
mm-hmm.
maybe three. But all of our guys, are almost all of them have been adopted out. They've adjusted really well. They're just amazingly wonderful dogs.
Oh, that's great. And let me ask you this, Meg. When you drove back from, back to home, back to Canada with this van full of dogs, what happened at the border? I mean, did they look the other way, or was there no issue to begin with because the Humane Society was directly involved?
We knew what we were supposed to do. We thought we did, and we had phoned the customs before we came back, before we left, actually,
mm-hmm.
and made sure it was all in the up and up. We knew we needed rabies vaccinations, which and basic health certificates from a vet, which each dog had to be vetted there before we left, which cost about $100.
Mm.
Their biggest expense there is the vet, for sure. Most dogs are in for something or other. You know, they all generally have to have their shots before
sure.
they get transported. Certainly to Canada, rabies was important. We tested all the dogs for heartworm. We only brought one dog home that was heartworm positive. She's living with me, and I'm about to have her treated to the tune of over $1,000.
Oh, my goodness.
And she's a great dog and worth every penny, so I'm thrilled to be able to help her.
Sure.
But they believe it or not, Bonnie, she's great at the border. You know, she's the person with the letterhead. You know, I had the dream that she had the letterhead.
That's
you
great.
Know, she just said,
yeah,
this is what we're doing, and he said, how many dogs you got back there? He wouldn't even have known had the puppies not been crying.
Right.
And even we said 16, and he just looked at us like we were crazy and said, have a good night.
Yeah.
We handed them the paperwork and whatnot, and we had each dog had a file and, you know, an envelope with their information, and
he didn't even
know. We were there 2 minutes, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. For some reason, I kind of suspected that it almost would have had to have gone that way. But yeah, great that you didn't get hung up, although it sounds like all the paperwork and stuff was in order. But,
right.
Meg, we're just probably nearing the end of our time here, but what can we do? Because it sounds like, I mean, you personally have spent quite a bit of dough and are about to on this next procedure. I mean, can through that Humane Society or otherwise, can people listening send donations to help with those costs, those expenses, or what do you recommend?
Well, people can either donate directly to myself or to the Cambridge Humane Society. We're planning another trip. As a matter of fact, I packed this morning because I'm not sure when and where I'm going. But
wow.
I may be going down to volunteer in one of the shelters for a week. And as well, we're planning on going with a number of vans in November and transporting some dogs back to Ontario. So,
okay, well, I know that the Humane Society's website, I believe at least, is spca.cambridgeweb.net. Is that correct?
About right.
Yeah, but how could people? I mean, is it strictly just through regular mail? If someone wanted to send you a check or some
I'm receiving checks by mail every day. I get a phone call saying, "What's your address?" So,
sure. Well, why don't you give that to us as well? Because I'm sure anyone listening who hears the story, if they could, would want to send you some dough, even if it was a small amount. Anything would I'm sure be helpful. So,
oh, absolutely.
So where
for sure. I mean, we're just thrilled to have any donations at all. We have sent $2,000 down to the Humane Society down in Alexandria that this particular shelter deals with. We're really glad to be able to send them some money as well.
Sure. Well, what's your address, Meg? Because I think we need to say goodbye here in a moment. But let's get
my full name is Meg Brubaker.
Mm-hmm.
And the
and it's Brubacher.
Yes.
Okay.
And the address is 49 Rhonda Road, Unit 140. And that's in Guelph, which is spelled G-U-E-L-P-H.
Okay.
In Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
My postal code is N as in Nancy, 1H7A4.
Great. Okay, so it's 49 Rhonda, Unit 140, Guelph, Ontario, N-I-H-7-A-4.
It's N-1.
Eight. Oh, right. Okay, you know what? I'm glad I said that because the way I wrote it, yeah, it could look like an I. Okay, good. So it's
number, letter, number, you know.
There you go. That's right. Okay, great. Well, and if anybody needs to double check with me now, I've got it, and they can email me, and we'll get them
fantastic.
Too. So, Meg, well, thank you so much. It's an amazing story, and you're doing great work, and hopefully a few people listening will send you a few bucks. I know that I will, and thank you very much for making the time to join us here on Talking Animals today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Okay, thanks, Meg. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, well, that's just the end of Talking Animals at this point. We're just going to make it short and snappy because we're already cutting into Jeff's time. But we want to thank everybody who joined us today. Thank you for listening. And just give you a heads up, the next week our guest will be activist and comedian extraordinaire Margaret Cho. So hope you'll join us for that next Monday, October 3rd. Otherwise, that's right. That's the way things go. But you know what? So anyways, I'm Duncan Strauss. It is Talking Animals. Stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease coming up momentarily. My thanks to Anna Morales for a huge production assistance today, especially when we had a bum phone number and she was scrambling to help us and whatever. So I really appreciate her help. And thanks very much for listening. This is Kula Shaker, as always, an animal-related tune to close things out. With Smart Dogs on KUCI in Irvine. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals. Thank you.
sweetly, honey. Let me sleep and let it.